sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
U.S. GDP disappoints, Netflix surges, central banks are buying stocks, and we had a tweet mini crash. All this and much more on episode number 311 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Oh, we have a lot to talk about. I mean, there is some nutty stuff going on in the markets and with central banks. We have Twitter that's going a little bit bonkers, and we're going to talk about that. This is Andrew Horowitz, and I want to welcome you. For those of you who have been listening for a while, thank you for joining me again. Thanks for your great emails that I always get from you. And for those of you who have just tuned in for the first time, I welcome you, and hopefully you'll go back and listen to some of the library that we have at iTunes. You go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, listen to it there, and you know, see the kind of things that we're talking about and why this is a great place for you to tune in on a weekly basis and listen to what's going on, because we try to give you the straight information, no puff and stuff and filler and, you know, one-sided talk about, hey, we're just bullish or bearish. Try to give you the meat, and you make some of the decisions on your own, some education as well. And that's what we're here for, and that's what it's all about. Let's talk about some of the things that are happening at the end of April here and into the first week of May. Big question, of course, is whether or not the old adage of sell in May go away. You know, what is going to be the driver now that's going to create the market to have another leg up? Or is this a triple top that we're looking at right now? Is there something that's going on that may see, you know, a correction that has been forecasted by so many that hasn't occurred? The biggest correction we've had is, I don't know, you know, 2-3%. And it's really occurred only over a couple of days, if you think about it. Seen a correction the week previous to this. We saw about a total of about 2% over a week period of time. And then all of a sudden, markets gathered steam and bought back in. And hey, it's all over. And it looks like everything is just fine and good, even with some disappointing numbers that we saw with GDP coming in at 2.5%. Now, you may say, wait a minute, how is 2.5% disappointing? Because, you know, it looked like that we were in the last quarter initially with the first read of a negative 0.1, and then it came back, we were at 0.5, and then the final was better and all that. And this quarter, we're talking about an annualized of somewhere in the 2-plus range, and how is that bad? Well, it's bad because when you look at what analysts and economists had predicted, they're looking for approximately a 3% number. And when it comes in at 2.5, that's clearly a disappointment. And expectations have been building, and that's why stocks and why markets are in buy mode to a degree, because we're seeing that, of course, or at least estimates were that we'd see a better GDP number, and we'd see better spending, and we'd see better employment, and we'd see better earnings and better revenues. And some of that's not really coming to fruition. We're seeing that GDP was light. And the question is, how long is GDP on a quarterly basis and annualized going to be able to maintain this kind of level, considering all the things that are out there? And then we have to consider also the stream of earnings. Of course, we're right in the middle of earnings season, and we saw a lot of earnings come in last week, a ginormous number for next week and this week coming up as well. Pretty much a mixed bag when you think about it. We did see that companies have been beating analyst estimates, and that's the game that's being played, and it's always been played, where you see that they beat by a penny or two or some other number, but yet recently in the last couple of quarters, revenues have not been beating estimates, and that's been a very big concern because we are seeing not only them not beat estimates, but in fact, we're seeing sequential drops in revenue over the last year or so. And that is a big, it really needs to be a big warning Because what happens is if you can't have the revenue coming in that is growing over time, you're not going to have earnings growing as well unless you do severe cost cutting. Let's take Microsoft as a great example. There was a lot of negativity going into the Microsoft number. Microsoft did okay, but one of the big things they talked about was they are doing a lot of strategic expense cutting, and a lot of that has to come in the form of human capital that we're well aware of. And Microsoft stock did very well after earnings because there is the idea that they are going to really focus in on cutting down expenses, making the company as lean as possible, and thus by doing so, will continue having a earnings growth over time, even though revenues may be questionable. The other thing that happened is, if you notice what happened with Microsoft, not only did they go up, they really spiked. I mean, they hit on Friday, they were up another 3% on Friday, up about 30, I think it was a 32 range or so, if my memory serves me correctly. And then it backed off all the way down to pretty much flat for the day, really nothing major. But one of the things that you're also seeing is that companies that issue dividends, so Microsoft has a 3%+ dividend, is very much in favor because if you can, it's very simple, if you could go out and get a CD or a bond or an alternative investment that maybe is yielding 1%, 1.5%, why not go to a company that has a pretty good cash position, has a pretty good balance sheet, has, as we all know, an excellent cash flow situation going on as they own the desktops around the world from an OS standpoint, and get about a 3 or 3.5% dividend? That makes a lot of sense. We talked about this so many times over the last couple of years that the Fed is really pushing people into alternative investments, alternative from the ordinary and typical income producing investments, because they need to keep rates low as possible to do what they can to supercharge the economy as much as they can by keeping rates low, by buying bonds, et cetera, doing extraordinary measures on the monetary front. And what's happened is that the natural move has been to stocks because there really are no other alternatives. Really, there's very little out there that you can do. You know, if you want to go out and you want to buy bonds that are lower rated than others, maybe you can get 2.5-3% these days on a shorter term bonds under 10 years. If you go out a little bit further, obviously, maybe a little bit more, but not much more. You can go out and find maybe some of the sovereign countries around the world that aren't doing as well. Maybe you go to France, maybe you go to Italy, but even those have come down dramatically because what we're seeing is that the stance of the central banks are behind all this. And, you know, you can't go to Asia and get anything good either. You know that the Japanese and the Bank of Japan is doing everything they can to push the yen lower and at the same time make bonds as unattractive as possible, but yet at the same time buying up all of them they can, trying to push people into an inflationary environment and warning them that this is going to happen and therefore bonds are going to go up in value, but yet they haven't so far. So all of this combined on a global basis from the central bank, it's this very coordinated effort to move people into alternative assets, into the idea that inflation is coming, has really started to permeate the markets of late, and people are giving up. They're saying, you know what, I give up. I thought for a while that I was going to be safe in bonds and I was going to be able to get a reasonable yield, and maybe it would be a year or two that, you know, I'll get a 1.5%, 2%, and then the yields will rise, and then I'll be in great shape. I'll reinvest the maturing bonds into other bonds, and I'll maybe get 3 or 4% back to a reasonable number. But that didn't happen, and that doesn't look like it's going to happen. So whether this is, at this point, a capitulation from the bondholder standpoint, as they're saying, you know what, fine. But yet you're not seeing the bonds rise either, meaning that they're not actually selling out of the bonds, but more so maybe taking some of the cash that they have on the sidelines or their other alternative investments and just slowly but surely putting them into equities, and particularly equities with higher dividends. But we're going to talk about some of the things that they're also doing, like this. You know, you ever have one of those moments that something happens and you're, the hair on the back of your neck stands up and you get this chill and you get this overwhelming feeling like, what is going on? You know, some people may have the idea that, you know, a ghost passed, or maybe something was, as they say, a hair-raising experience. They got so frightened, or maybe it's just an epiphany of somehow. We're going to talk about what happened to me last week when I read a particular article with some information about the central banks. I think it was very interesting. We're also going to talk about what's going on with Twitter and some of the things that we have to get to with regard to the earnings that are coming up this week and the economics and how to kind of situate yourself right now, because we're really in a, I would say, a trading range that's really, really fascinating. Got to talk about gold as well. Before we do that, I want to talk about GoToMeeting for a moment, though. And GoToMeeting is one of these things we talk about all the time because they're great. They're just fantastic. What a great concept. If you are anyone that, well, if you're anyone, really, if anyone that deals with other people, has to explain something in a sales situation, maybe in a management situation, maybe simply just sharing things like photos, etc. GoToMeeting is one of those great systems, programs, or, you know, inventions, if you will, that allows you to actually share your information and meet in a way that is not only one to one, but one with many. Whereas you can actually share your desktop, you could share documents, you can collaborate, and it's so simple to use, and that's the beauty of it. And it's usable on all sorts of platforms. You could use it on, you know, PCs or Mac OS, or you could use it on your iPad, your iPhone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what's interesting, though, is that because of the desire of Citrix to allow for you to check this out, because they know that once you do, you're going to be hooked. You can get it free for 30 days. Simply go gotomeeting.com, click on the try it free button, and use the promo code podcast. And if you haven't done it by now, I don't know what you're waiting for. Very simple. www.gotomeeting.com, click the try it free button, and you get 30 days free. Just use the promo code podcast, and you will be liking it a lot as we do here. Okay, now, the other things we want to talk about. I mentioned this hair-raising experience, this moment that I was just absolutely stuck in place when I read something. I was eyes wide open, mouth agape, and I was just bewildered, and I was fascinated, and I was struck. Because I read an article that confirmed something that was kind of in the background. Something that I thought was, well, not possible, but who knows? And it was an article that identified that central banks around the world have been involved in directly buying equities. Now, what does that mean? Well, we know that for years that from time to time in Japan, the Bank of Japan has been very active in buying ETFs in equity markets. They've obviously bought other things. They bought REITs. They've been buying real estate. They can to prop up the markets over time because they wanted to make sure that they instilled confidence. And when their markets were just imploding and when their economy was not getting any better, when deflation was continuing and they knew that there was not much that they can do beyond keeping interest rates low, and they did that for two decades with nothing happening, with the continuation of deflationary trends, with an aging population, you know, yada, yada, yada. Okay, fine, we knew that. But now we start reading that Israel started buying U.S. equities, about $75 billion of them in the first quarter of 2013. And other governments, or I should say central banks, via direct or maybe even through, we know sovereign wealth funds have done this for a while, but it was much more blatant. And it was laid out in a way in this particular Bloomberg article that talked about that there was a more active and aggressive stance being taken. Why? One of the reasons they cite is that the central banks are looking to diversify their portfolios because they have a whole heap of bonds that they bought over time, and it would just make logical sense to diversify away from just, you know, these instruments that have run up in value and at this point maybe are at the peak. Doesn't that make sense? I mean, you diversify, right? Hell no. Who is a central bank to be diversifying? A central bank's job is not to hold a portfolio of securities looking for profit. Their job is to adjust monetary policy, for the most part, for inflationary trends and for economic growth, stability, etc. And what their jobs and their mandates generally are is that they have a tool, which is an interest rate tool, where they can adjust interest rates and they can make it,
you know, a little bit tougher to get money, extracting money from the economy. They can make it easier by pumping money into the economy, by making interest rates lower. They can do things like change the reserve requirements of a bank. There are a lot of little things they could do, very small little touches here and there that actually will help to stimulate or to bring an economy in a little bit. But to go out and buy stocks, and who knows at what extreme, and who knows who's doing it, to diversify a portfolio, I want you to think about this for a second. Let me set this up for you. Central banks have been borrowing money, or we'll say it a different way, printing money from their economy, and a lot of them have been doing quantitative easing or other types of bond buying that is meant to stabilize their economies. So they create money and they buy the bonds. Well, now they're upset that bonds aren't yielding anything and they want to make money on their portfolios. So what they're going to do is they're going to go out and they're going to maybe borrow more money or, again, create money or however you want to call it, go out and buy equities. Now, what's interesting about this, if you think about it, they're levering up. They're leveraging their abilities and they're buying stocks. Now, one of the problems is that if they are in fact doing all this for portfolio diversification and portfolio returns, which again, I think is absolutely ludicrous, think about it. They're out there touting how the economy is better and how they're going to do all this. Well, that helps stocks. Well, that helps their portfolio then. And in fact, it's kind of like a pump and dump kind of scheme if you think about it. I mean, you wouldn't allow individuals to talk their book in this way if they had inside knowledge and the Fed has inside knowledge about what they're going to be doing with their monetary policy. Think about this. And the second thing is, if they're actually investing with the mindset that they're going to be looking to create profits on the things that they do, can they ever really go out and sell their bond? If they raise interest rates and their intent is to actually make money on their portfolios, how do they actually do so when, in fact, we know that the massive amount of bonds that they have accumulated are going to go down in value significantly because the move from a ZIRP or a zero interest rate policy in the U.S. or a very low policy around the world into the next stage where they actually start extracting money from the economy and slowing it down whenever that occurs? How are they going to do that without disrupting their portfolio? And if they do so, how does it work? If they are really involved, and not every one of them, and clearly we don't know if the U.S. is doing this, although supposedly not. We don't know if they're actually doing this in England, but okay. We don't know if they're doing this in other places around the world, but we have indications that several central banks are, in fact, doing this. So now what they're doing is, again, they're putting the risk much higher, kind of what happened a few years ago with pension funds, endowment funds, etc. And now what they're doing is putting the money that we have, the tax dollars, the money, the currency, at the risk of the markets. And how they unravel this is anyone's guess. How they unravel from being in bonds, because if they do, interest rates go higher, and then there's going to be the potential for movement out of stocks, then they have to sell their stocks, then their bonds start moving, and they lose money, and they're going to have to sell. I mean, think about this for a second. There's only one way to keep this whole ball on top of the little pin that it's kind of resting on right now, and that is to continue buying, continue keeping interest rates low, and to keep pumping money into the equity markets. Now, I'm not talking about the benefit of good earnings or bad earnings. I'm not talking about the economic conditions. I'm just talking about the concept of a central bank utilizing a portfolio for returns rather than just utilizing monetary policy for economic growth or regulation or, you know, kind of moving in and out of higher or lower inflationary times. I mean, it's absolutely not only ludicrous. Frankly, it borders on the criminal. Because now you kind of take the entire thesis of a capital market, of a free capital market condition when it comes to equities, and toss it right out the window. If central banks are going to be there to buy when things get ugly, What's the point of even looking at any information? What you do is every time the market goes down, you just buy because you know they're going to be there. And doesn't that seem very interesting to what's been going on lately? The market goes down a little bit and they ramp it up. Market goes down a little bit, they ramp it up. When the market's up, they move it up even more. Bad GDP doesn't matter. Terrible jobs numbers last month doesn't matter. Slowing manufacturing, no problem. I mean, it goes on and on if you think about how wrong this is and how this will end very badly. Now, does it have to end tomorrow badly? No. Does it have to end next week or next month? Next year? No. Because if they have an unlimited amount of money, they can keep on playing this game over and over. And as other central banks say, hey, look what these guys are doing over here. They're making all sorts of money on, wow, what a great idea. We have unlimited money. Let's go out and buy some stocks. It's kind of the new breed of central bankers, the new age of market, I don't want to say manipulation because that's really not the word, market balancing. The economy is all based on markets, whereas the economy used to be based on, hold on, wait for it, the economy. Now everybody's looking all the time as to the health of the economy by looking at the valuation or the price or the movement of stocks. The wealth effect has gone haywire. I want you to really think about this. I'm not kidding. This is something very bad. This is something very ugly. This is something that is really I think it's a slap in the face to anybody who looked at markets as a place that was a freely tradable and a way to invest where you can actually do any kind of research to make any decisions. Think about that. If there's always going to be this constant bid because you have an unlimited amount of money, what does it tell you? Doesn't that tell you that, hey, that makes a lot of sense? You know, if I was thinking for the last 6 months, all this negative data that doesn't really affect anything and the whole European thing and the China thing and the Japan thing, oh, why aren't stocks going down even more? I see earnings that are kind of questionable and I see revenues that are not keeping up, but revenues growth is really not so good and, you know, yada, yada, on, blah, blah, blah. And here we are now finding out, which I knew, by the way, one day, I always said, one day, 10 years from now, 5 years from now, I want to just look back and understand better really what went on during these periods where we saw all these things happen, where you see a momentary move in markets and it's bought, or a very, very shallow drop in securities. In fact, so much so that where you see a stock oftentimes about to fall off a very key support level that it's rescued. Somebody throws at the old fish hook or the a rescue blanket to protect it and make it feel better and drive it back up. And everybody says, oh, it must be that it's not so bad because, well, look, the stock's going up again. So really file that away in the back of your heads. I want you to keep on thinking about that and keep that somewhere and keep your eyes open for other articles that come out and other commentary that comes out, because I do not think this is being discussed at all. One of the things that we've been discussing here for I don't even know how long, months, is this whole yen issue. You know, the Bank of Japan's experiment, the great yen experiment, and what's going on and how it's really been also been very much reason why markets are moving one direction or the other. We do see a high correlation with the yen movement and U.S. equities as a great example. Clearly, Japanese equities, you know, the yen moves up, they move up. The yen moves down a little bit, the Japanese equities move down. It's a constant movement that is highly correlated and really should be. On the other hand, you have to wonder if the currency is such a very big reason and rationale why an equity market or equities move up, particularly in an export economy. Why is it that the dollar is at 83 approximately, yet the markets have not really even flinched when it comes to the valuation of the dollar like they had in the past? So if you get my drift here, what I'm saying to you is that there is something a little fishy when it comes to how markets are moving, and particularly when we're seeing some negative news and the reaction that just doesn't care at all what that is. In fact, it almost looks like they're looking for some negative news as reason to buy.
And the more the markets go down, the more they get pissed off and want to buy more. Kind of a crazy scenario here. But one of the things that I think was interesting also that we have to talk about is what happened with that false and bogus tweet that happened last week. Now, if you hadn't paid attention, you don't know what I'm talking about, let me give you kind of the setup here. What happened was that during the day, about, I think it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon on, I want to say it was Tuesday, there was an interesting event. Markets were kind of plodding along and doing their thing and all that. And all of a sudden, there was a kind of a stalling and all of a sudden, this drop of about, I don't know, about 100 points on the Dow. And I think the S&P was down about 7 or 8 points from where it was. And there was this just momentary, like, implosion. And it looked pretty ugly. And I'm like, look at what's going on. Now, the news came in that it was a tweet from the Associated Press that said that the White House had recently been rocked by 2 different bombs and President Obama was hurt. And markets just went berserk. Now, of course, we're talking about this post the Boston, you know, horrible event that happened there at the Boston Marathon and the bombings, et cetera. And, you know, you don't know whether the truth or not. And then what happened was probably about, I guess it was about within about 2 minutes, markets realized, wait a minute, there's you know, there's no claim here that's true. And Associated Press came out and said it was a false and it was a they were, I guess, hacked. And yeah, so the markets turned around and went right back up. But really what I want to talk about was not so much that, but how it occurred. First of all, we don't know how the Associated Press was hacked, and that's a whole different discussion. But really what was most fascinating about it was that within moments after this tweet was released, that markets cratered. Now, if you don't have, if you're not on the list of the Associated Press, which they have plenty of followers, and you're not watching it at all times, and you're not trading, you're just maybe just an investor, you know, how do you wonder how markets reacted so quickly and so violently? How does that happen? Does everybody read? Everybody just start selling? Nobody waits for confirmation for further information. Just all of a sudden, the first thing they do is they click the button on their computer and they sell everything they have. They sell futures. They go out and sell the ETFs. I mean, and how does this all occur? Well, here is really where it gets a little bit more more than fascinating, because now what happens is that you have to realize, in this day of computers and computer algorithms and computer algorithm-generated trading, that the algorithms, there are some that are news-driven, and they look especially for these kind of things. So what they're doing is they're out there and attached to all these different maybe news sources, Twitter, possibly Facebook, all over the place, looking for certain words. They're looking for maybe bombing. They're looking for maybe assassination. And they're looking for maybe, and they put things together like, and they weigh it like White House bombing altogether is potentially a problem. President hurt is even more of a waiting. And what happens is then they get themselves into motion either for the positive or the negative, whatever the news may be, right? So maybe you've noticed that after an economic release, how quickly markets move. And sometimes they move in an odd manner, because you see them move one way and then all of a sudden they turn around and go the other way. Well, what is happening there is very similar, that the news is taken in by the algos and then they are traded upon instantaneously. And if in fact, let's say they short or sell the market out at, let's just call it $2, let's pick a number, $2, and all of a sudden it starts moving down and it's down to $1.50 and $1.25. Okay, well, everything's good. But if it crosses above the $2 mark, the algorithm is set to blow it off. Say, hey, bad move. Let's move out. And then all of a sudden you see a buy-in. And the result, of course, is a massive move the other way. If you look at the 5-minute bar on the chart of the S&P 500 or the S&P futures, and you look at that exact time frame when the information came out, the false information came out on Twitter, you'll see this gigantic straight bar down and an equally straight bar up right afterwards. Now, what also happens is that
the news-driven algos get a hold of this, and then they start moving the market one way or another. Let's go back to our example where they're moving the markets down. They're actually selling off the market, and what happens next? What happens next is that the technical algos, the ones that are looking for certain price points, the ones that are saying, okay, if it goes below this level, we're going to sell. If it goes above that level, we're going to buy, we're going to cover, we're going to short, etc. Well, they get all of a sudden the signal to buy or sell, and they even make it a much greater move to the downside. So when you add that up, you have to look at this and say, wait a minute, so we have the news-driven algos that move everything, then we have the technical algos that move everything, then you have the regular investor who's caught in the middle of all this, doesn't know which way to go, and then all of a sudden, again, the technicals get tripped because it starts moving back up because it's a false piece of information. When that happens, of course, they're no longer a profitable trade. They close that trade. The news-driven algos say, wait a minute, it was false, and they move up. Maybe they were overridden by someone. And all of a sudden, everything moves back to the other side. And again, then you have the next situation. The technical-driven algos all of a sudden get tripped on the upside, so they go into buying, not only covering, but buying that. And this is how we're getting this unbelievable movement of markets of late. Because we're getting news-driven algos, we're getting technical algos, we're getting the eco-driven algos, we're getting, you know, central banks buying. All this is going into the play in such quick fashion, instantaneous moves without thought. It just happens. The algos just say, if this, then this. If it crosses below here, then sell. If it crosses above here, then buy. If it crosses below here, then it moves back up. There was support. Hey, buy again. So all of this is going on in the background. And it's also in the background of high liquidity, highly leveraged positions, and somewhat of, even though there's high liquidity, a thin market. In other words, if you look at markets right now, the moves that you see because of maybe earnings, just enormous swings. Because while there is liquidity, there is not a lot of either selling going on or buying. The liquidity is stacked. And we're not seeing it all at one level. We're not seeing a lot of thick liquidity. We have a lot of gaps in the market. So they're filling, they're falling, they're filling, they're falling. Just look at gold, which we're going to get into in a second. We have things to talk about with gold. But this leads me to a really great question that came in. And this was, let's hear this by Mike. Mike sent in this question. I believe he is in Canada. He said, hey, great show. Thanks so much for having it. He says that, Andrew, you haven't talked about sell stops on the show for a while. Maybe you could comment on this next time or sometime in the future. It might be something that I have an opinion on. He said, it'd be interesting to get some opinions on the use of stops in this microsecond volatility market, market sell, sell stop, limit, et cetera, and also what causes type of price action. Was it computer probing for sell orders, looking for the closest support level, or just a malfunction? Well, Mike, we talked a little bit about that, but what's really, I think, your question here and what I think has to be dealt with is the concept of, wait a minute, here I am, I buy stock ABC, and I buy it at $12, and I say, you know what, if the stock goes below $11, just to make the numbers easy, I'm going to sell out because, you know, it's a protective stop, et cetera. And what you find is happening is that not only does that happen, but it happens way too often. You're sitting there trying to be reasonable in terms of money management and making sure that you don't lose any money on a trade that doesn't work in your favor. But what's happening is that you're getting blown out because maybe your stop levels are set a little too close, or maybe even though they're set far. And then you realize, wait a minute, they stopped me out, but then they move the stock up again. Or on the other side, the same thing with the short. There is the ability for the algorithms, the computers, to understand where the stops are. And, of course, a lot of them happen right at support or resistance levels. And those are not really that hard to figure out. Now, you can do things like draw simple lines and look at trend lines and look at support, look at where the key support has been, where the lowest point of a stock has been. You could do something like what we've built for TradeStation. I think I told you about this. You can get that. We have these algorithms also for you that you can actually use on TradeStation or eSignal or MT4 or NinjaTrader, Bloomberg. They're called profiles, market profile, where you see where the volume and the stock price, or the volume and the commodity, the future, where there is real support, where there really is resistance, and when there's nothing, where there's kind of a gaping hole, gap, fast zone, as we call it. So let me just kind of give you a quick commercial on this. If you want to get it, there is a free trial over at TradeStation in the Strategy Labs. If you use TradeStation, just click on your Strategy Lab or your Strategy Network and type in the word or the letters TAS, TAS, and you'll see the different things that are available. There's a TAS Vega Lite. This is a great introduction. What we did is we combined the actual market profile utilizing volume and price and this very high-end calculation of where the most significant value area is and areas where the stock potentially could consolidate or break out or break down. And we color-coded it very easily so you could see where it moves up. And it's green. This is where you want to look at entering positions. Actually, there's a warning indicator, a yellow bar that will pop up, and then that's kind of where you want to buy on the upside or sell on the downside or short. And it gives you these zones and where the highest probability of a move happens and gives you a really good roadmap. Again, it's available also on Bloomberg. It's available on eSignal. All these things, you can grab trials on most of them. But if you want to get a trial to the kind of the premium thing that I helped design, which is the TAS Pro Vega, and a few of the other ones, you can go over to TradeStation and download it from the Strategy Network. I really encourage you to check it out. There's no cost to it. You can just check out the trial at least. And I would also like to tell you, you get the guide to this, so that if nothing else, it gives you an education on what these market profiles are, what the fast zones are, what the consolidation areas are, and how to kind of understand better, much better understand the whole idea of support and resistance. It's not just simply kind of a level that looks like it's not broken down through, because it could be further support underneath that. So what we're talking about here, Mike, is the idea that, well, where do I put my sell stops then? What do I do? That's a really great concept because that you're thinking about, because it's really a very volatile situation that you can get blown out left and right by leaving your sell stops. One of the things you could do if you want is you could have a sell stop limit. So therefore, the price doesn't break out below you and just keep on going down. It only sells at the price that you define. The negative side of that is if it keeps on going down, you don't get out. But these market orders on the stops are good and bad. They have to be managed very carefully. I'm telling you right now that number one rule of thumb with sell stops, never use a round number. Try not to use 37. Because oftentimes when it gets close to that area, for whatever reason, the round number phenomena, they won't break down. Or if they do, they go down much harder, but then they pop back up. There's kind of like a unwritten law about round numbers, particularly the right on the level, the 37s, 38s, 37.50. But the round numbers are really important. Oftentimes you'll see when a stock breaks down, let's say a 37, it'll go down quickly, down to 36.50, 36.60, and then kind of come back up, because all of a sudden all these sell stops that have been in there are actually being triggered and it's flushing down. Now you can use this to your advantage as well, Mike. You could say, wait a minute, I'm going to do some buying here, but I'm only going to buy if it hits these levels. And it looks like if it does break down this level, it's going to see a quick flush and it may in fact hold there. So you bring your buying down below the support levels, below the flush level, so that you don't just get buy in and then all of a sudden get flushed out yourself. Right? The other thing is about stops and on the short side. Short side, you'll see a lot more volatility, a lot more action, and it moves away from you much quicker because you get short squeezes. You need to be very careful about this. My suggestion is, if you're going to use sell stops and you're just kind of really not worried about getting out, but you want to be smart about it, what you should do is utilize it in increments. So for example, if you, again, back to our $37 or $38 stocks, let's say 37, it breaks down. You don't want to go below 36.50 for whatever reason that you set up and you analyze. So it moves down to 36.50. And what you do is you take a piece off, take 25% off. And then you move it down a little bit. So you have a few set up, you take another 25% off, another 25% off. And if it breaks down totally, you're totally out. This way you have a little bit of leeway, a little bit of range to be right or wrong about this. The other thing that you can do is, just like I mentioned, that you could actually wait for the breakdown to occur and then enter the stock and see if that's something that you've really been looking to get, a piece of. You could do the same thing with shorts. If it breaks above a certain area, that's when you're going to get in. So if it breaks above, you think that's kind of that's the top end of it. Well, you're going to get the best price possible if it moves beyond that. And what you do is then you buy it at that point, or short at that point, I should say, and then you kind of manage the position from there. But I would say, Mike, yes, I agree with you that with the markets moving as they are, you can't just blindly put in an order because you would have been whacked but good during that erroneous tweet that we saw. With markets moving down so hard and all of a sudden this kind of this mini crash that we saw, individual stocks also got hit very hard and you would have been kind of out of luck. You had to stop in, it hit, before you even could do anything, maybe you were in the bathroom. I don't know. Maybe you were just, you know, simply turning around talking to somebody. If you're a trader, you look back, you're like, hey, what just happened? Wait, why did my position just get blown out? Wait, oh man, what a bummer. So you got to reinitiate, and then you really don't want to reinitiate because you're looking at what happened. You're like, you know what? There's something really funky happening. So you know what I'm talking about if you've ever used sell stops. But you have to use them for protection. You have to use them, you know, for a degree of sanity. You can't just let things go forever. So what we call is soft stops. We have numbers that we get alerts on. If you have a software platform that will give you an alert to reevaluate, maybe take a small piece off, but then reevaluate. That's my whole position. Thanks, Mike, for writing that in. But I think it's really important, especially when it comes to earnings season, which I think maybe it's a good time to talk about. We have lots to talk about when it comes to earnings season. And we know already that earnings season has been pretty dicey. You got to be really careful with where you're placing those stops and all that because there are companies that are beating and miraculously they go down and there's companies that are missing and they go up. And by the way, just a side note, you know, with the combination of stop discussion and the combination of the market profile discussion and the combination of how we have these algos, Trigger Point Research, the equity alerts is up about 12% approximately since inception. And none of the positions are held more than 30 days. And most of them usually were either stopped out or taken profits within 2 weeks. We just closed a position on Leucadia for about 9.5% gain. That worked out really nice. About a, I think it was about a 15 or 16 day, maybe it was a 20 day holding period for that. We still have a few things that are on. And generally speaking, the losses are pretty minor. We hold them very tight. But what we do is we, you know, let the winners get to their point. And we have very predefined points. So we send you an email or a text that says, hey, ABC stock breaking out. The buy is at this point. The stop is at that point. And the profit target is at that point. We give you a discussion of it. And we tell you a little bit about it, give you the chart of it. And, you know, that's kind of your initiation point, if you will. And then we manage it. If there's a change in the position in terms of a stop or there's a change in position because of a profit target, we'll give you that as well. And you get a 14-day free trial over at TriggerPointResearch.com, the equity alerts. So let's see what's going on in terms of earnings. I think I mentioned the Apple earnings, Netflix surge. Wow, you know, they came out with some interesting earnings. There's been some discussion about how maybe that's not sustainable. Amazon, finally, you get a decent earnings number in Amazon. Like, I mean, doesn't that make you just crazy? You get a decent EPS number that's a beat, and you have a kind of an okay revenue, okay, and the stock is up about 3% and all that, and then it drops about 7.5% the next day, which seems to be a kind of a pattern. If you remember last couple, we saw them drop a few percent, and then the next day they were up 7%. So I'm not sure what that 7% number has to do with anything, but that is clearly a little bit of a trend and a quantifiable level that I've been seeing when it comes to Amazon. But Amazon, clearly, you know, you're having the same thing as we're seeing with other companies. There's a realization that, hey, earnings may not be holding up. And at the same time, the story has been with Amazon for a while now that they're reinvesting in the company, they're reinvesting in themselves, they're doing what they can to build the infrastructure and the delivery platforms to really expand much further than they are. And I guess it caught up to them this time because investors didn't like it as much thus far. But let's talk about what's going to happen next week. We have a boatload of earnings that are coming up. We're starting in the morning of the 29th. As you would know, we have, what do we have coming up? Let's see. In the morning, we have Valero Energy coming up. We have Pfizer, which will be coming up. Starwood Hotels, Cummings, which will be coming up. Avon Products. Riverbed is after the market closes, and we'll see how that actually plays. Buffalo Wild Wings, which hit a recent high of, you know, I don't know. We'll see how this actually plays out. EPS estimates of 99 cents. Earnings about $303 million. Estimates have been dropped over the last couple of weeks, but yet revenue estimates have been moving higher. Hartford Insurance will also be coming out looking for 82 cents. Newmont Mining, who actually reduced their dividend
last week, looking for about 77 cents and $2.2 billion of revenue. SBA Communications will be coming out. So there's lots coming out. Actually, you know, some of that was actually on the 30th. Forgive me. Some of the before markets were on the 30th. Really looking at the few that we mentioned. Lowe's, which will be coming out before the market on Monday. Hartford, I mentioned. Express Scripts, SBA. And then just to kind of go back to this, before the market on the 30th is Cummings. We have also Pfizer and Valero. Also, U.S. Silica Holdings, SLCA. Looking for about 36 cents a share on about $120 million of revenue. Now, this stock has been all over the place. If you look at a stock chart, SLCA is the symbol. And this is an interesting company. I mean, they do a lot in the fracking area. They do a lot in the, obviously, in the silicone area. And they've been just all over the place. They've recently seen analysts drop their estimates. We'll see how this all plays out. This is going to be on Tuesday morning before the market. We're also going to see McGraw-Hill come out this is on the 30th in the market in the morning, looking for about 74 cents on about $1.1 billion of revenue. They've obviously been under attack because of their ratings with the S&P. Their stock has done remarkably well in the face of all that. We have some of the investment firms, the money managers coming out. We have Invesco coming out in the morning on the 30th. Looking for about 47 cents on about $1.13 billion. Franklin Resources, 8:30 in the morning, looking for about $2.50 of EPS on almost $2 billion of revenue. We also have some of the we have the continuation of biotechs and also technology companies. SolarWinds, which is a network software company, very cool company, very volatile though. Looking for about 37 cents on about only $75 million of revenue. But we also have coming out two companies that are very interesting. We have Q-Core. They are a company that's involved they're obviously a pharmaceutical company, MS Drugs. They're looking for 96 cents on about $157 million of revenue. Now, QuestCore was the number one stock last year. It's been moving all over the place. It's the target of many of the short sellers that are out there that write their various articles, et cetera. Really quality company. We'll have to see how this plays out because they can move wildly. I will share with you that we've liked them. We've bought them before. We don't hold them right now, although I may be looking to pick this company up in the future, see how they play out a little bit. Another small tech company, SourceFire, FIRE, is coming out after the market on the 30th, 12 cents on $57 million. Office Depot will be coming out also that day. U.S. Steel, 3D Systems. This is the other one that I want you to look at. 3D Systems, they make obviously the 3D printers like the company Stratasys, looking for 21 cents on about $101 million. The estimates have not really changed at all over the last 4 weeks or so, which is really kind of cool. We'll see how that plays out. Yeah, Merck coming out, Time Warner. Let's see. I'm going to find some interesting ones for you here. All right, here's one. MasterCard is coming out on the 1st. That should be something to watch because we've been seeing that these companies have been doing very, very well in terms of their opportunity to make money. And when it comes to MasterCard, Visa, et cetera, really something you should be looking at. Looking for about $6.17 of EPS on about $2 billion in revenue. Estimates being ratcheted down ever so slightly over the last 4 weeks or so. We're also going to see, let's see what else is interesting here. Archer Daniels Midland after the market on the 1st, looking for 51 cents on $21 billion. JDS Uniphase, you got to watch that one because we're watching the tech companies, particularly the network and the parts companies. 11 cents with $417 million of revenue. Walter Energy, WLT, watch that. Looking for a loss of 87 cents a share on $507 million of revenue. Cliffs came out last week and they actually beat earnings, were up about 18% on the session when that happened. Las Vegas Sands, after the market on the 1st, I got to tell you something. I am very surprised at how well Las Vegas Sands has actually been working and the stock has been moving in the face of all the negative issues that are really playing there. The Macau revenue is down. Las Vegas revenue is down. There's some lawsuits against the company. We just saw that their auditor over the weekend stepped down, resigned, long-standing auditor left. That's never a good thing to look at. Watch Las Vegas Sands, 67 cents on $3.2 billion they're looking for. And the estimates have actually increased by 23% over the last several weeks. This will be on my short list, I'll tell you right now, just to get it out in the open. This will be on my short list to watch for shortable opportunities. Facebook's going to be coming out on the first after the market, going to be watched very, very closely. 13 cents of EPS they're looking for on about $1.4 billion of revenue. Yeah, Visa coming out as well. Let's kind of go down the list and see what we got here that's really interesting. What I'll do is I will put this list on the disciplinedinvestor.com that you'll see. You can download a PDF. All these lists of key earnings we'll have up there for you before the week starts. Right after you listen to this, you'll be able to go grab that. I'll make sure to try to put a link in there as well. Put this up very soon. Let's see what else we have. Caesars Entertainment. Interesting. Caesars Entertainment is one of the leaders in what everybody believes to be the online gaming area, CZR. They're looking for $1.46 of a loss on about $2 billion of revenue. So we'll see how that is going to play out. Let's keep on going because there's a lot coming out. We got some more home builders coming out. Beazer Homes, BZH, looking for a loss of 69 cents on $253 million of revenue. One thing I want you to watch, you got to always watch the names that have something going along with it. Well, you need to watch New Skin, NUS. Now, New Skin is a multi-level marketing concept, very similar to Herbalife, and they've been kind of working in tandem. A lot of shorts on these names. So if you could see that they do beat, you're going to see a big move. Obviously, if they miss, you're going to see a big move on the other side because the shorts will pile on. 79 cents with $506 million of revenue they're looking for. That's before the market on the 2nd. Let's see. We have that coming out. That's not too exciting. Cigna coming out. Kellogg. We'll see what happens there. Invesense. Hain Celestial, which has been a target of short sellers, has been moving back and forth. Stock has moved up last time after they beat recently. 72 cents are looking for about $479 million revenue on the 2nd. Tempur-Pedic. Now, making mattresses. Hasn't been such the greatest business in a while, but Select Comfort comes out with an earnings that I was pretty surprised how miserable I thought they were in terms of current. A little bit of a better outlook. Stock moved up like crazy. Big short interest on this. Looking for 63 cents with only $340 million of revenue. And then we're rounding it off. I mean, it's like three more pages here, but I'm just going to kind of really go through this. Mohawk Industries, making floors. It seems to be a great business. Hit an all-time high not too long ago. 84 cents on $1.5 billion. General Motors coming out on the 2nd of May, looking for a profit of 54 cents on $36 billion. Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. And then we'll see at the end of the week, we're going to see Berkshire Hathaway. And let's see what else we got here. Cheniere Energy, LNG, is going to be coming out, looking for a loss of 20 cents. I'd watch that one. And then you got First Solar. We'll see what happens there. That thing's been all over the place. Some people are predicting the death of it. Some people are saying, hey, this is going to be, you know, go back where it was. 26% increase in EPS over the last 4 weeks by analysts. You got to watch that. We'll put all of this whole list, this gigantic list. It's about 8, 9, 10 pages of just the key earnings that are coming out next week. Before we go, I want to talk about, we got to get to all this stuff here. What's coming up with economics? You need to pay attention. This also is an article I wrote each and every week. We put it up on the site. You'll see it there at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. First thing we have on Monday morning, personal income and spending. We're going to see the survey says that we're going to go from about 1.0% gain to about 0.4%. So income and spending are actually going to drop. Pending home sales are expected to do a bit of a rebound from last period, which we saw a drop. Nobody seemed to care. But here's what's happening on Tuesday morning. We got the S&P Case-Shiller Composite 20-year looking for a 9% gain in house values, home values on the 20-city composite on a year-over-year basis. Wow. Wow. Think about that. It's like the good old days again. We'll see if that happens, but I don't see why it should be too much of a problem. Last time we saw about an 8% rise in that. We got the consumer confidence number coming out, expectations for 61, which is pretty much depressed. It was 59 last time. Miraculously, again, this is the second time with the final reading of the University of Michigan, which came out the first reading light. Final reading is way above. This happened last Friday at 10 o'clock in the morning. Once again, somehow, University of Michigan is doing their initial reading, and then they do two others. The final reading comes out much higher weeks later than the initial. I don't know what's going on there. I wish somebody would get to the bottom of it because there's a very big inconsistency there that really needs to be addressed. Now, we do have the labor numbers coming out, the employment numbers coming out from the BLS at the end of the week. And that means that we also have the ADP employment change looking for about 155,000 gain in employment. Okay, that's pretty good. Construction spending is supposed to drop a little bit. But here's the key things that you want to pay attention to next week. You got the ISM manufacturing number, which is looking to actually drop. It was 51.3. It's been a bunch higher. It's been coming down. It's looking to go to 51. Under 50 is contraction, not good. Over 50 is expansion, very good. When you get much further away on either side, it either makes it that much better or that much worse. But I want you to watch this. I have been very concerned about this as we're seeing the regional numbers for manufacturing not really hold up very well. But yet we saw ISM holding up for a while pretty well. Factory orders were good, but yet at the same time, inventories were very high. That is actually put pressure on the manufacturing numbers because, you know, if you're not selling, what happens is that you raise your inventory, manufacturers aren't going to get their orders. We got the FOMC, whoop-de-doo, doing a rate decision, which means nothing but talking up the market on the first. And then we have, of course, on Friday, the non-farm payrolls number looking for a gain of 150,000 versus a gain that was pretty light last time of 88,000. 7.6% unemployment rate, which means nothing. A slight gain in manufacturing. And then we have the other thing that's very important is the ISM non-manufacturing or the service industry index, which of course we know makes up about 70% of the U.S. economy in terms of services and consumption. I want you to look at this. We're looking for factory orders right at the same time, dropping 2.5%, which I would agree with considering all the things we've seen. I think last month was a bit of an aberration somehow in this factory order number. But they're looking for 54 on ISM non-manufacturing, and there was some surprise downsides recently. We saw over the weekend that, we saw a couple things. We saw that the China numbers came down on the manufacturing and the service, but we also saw the industrial profits come down much more than were expected. And I believe, call me crazy, there was some weird aberration going on in like February and part of March, and reality is going to start to hit home in this quarter moving forward in terms of the economic numbers. Stock market may do anything, but the economic numbers are going to start showing up, some realistic numbers, which is the result of the sequester, which and the fact that the payroll tax holiday has gone away. I think those things are going to play out here. And I think we need to be on watch for that. Because even though we have, in this discussion, we've talked about central banks buying, we've talked about, you know, markets just defying gravity in some cases, some of this matters. It's going to matter eventually. It may not matter this month, last month, this week. But you know what? If it continues doing what it's doing, seeing softening economics throughout the summer, which is traditionally a soft time for economics, and if it's actually moving in that direction even further, I think you got to look at that very carefully. So let's see if there's anything on my list. I have so much excitement today. There's so many things to talk about. Talked about the yen. I think we talked about the yen. Watch the VIX, VXX, or one of your favorite. I like that better than others. You know, we're seeing it kind of start to inch up a little bit. And look at that as an opportunity. Also look again at the gold miners. Dust or nugget are the two symbols we look at. They're triple just for a trade. Gold. I've been talking to a lot of people about gold, about what happened. Why did it sell off? What's the story? Why did it all of a sudden drop? Some people are telling me that there was a gigantic margin call in Japan. That in Japan, they were forced to be selling, and this could be just because of the reaction to where the yen is and how quickly it moved and how much gold was being bought because of the rise in the value of gold. And there was a gigantic margin call that isn't over. There's going to be another one within a couple of weeks. This is what I'm being told. We're leaning on the short side of gold right now because it did pop up nicely last week. We saw oil also come up nicely last week. But at the same time, I think that there is, you know, with the smoke, there's fire. And there's something not quite right about the gold trade right now. That enormous move down was not just the simple hand of everybody saying at the same time, you know what, economies are much better and there's really no inflation and there's no worry here. That's not what went on with that kind of move that we saw with gold. So take a look at gold. There's a couple different ways to play it. If you want to go short or long, use your discretion. Be careful. You can do it through commodities. You know, just work on the futures exchange markets. You could work on ETFs. You could do it through the gold miners. So just kind of play it. We're doing a little bit of both right now. We're kind of saying the gold miners are a little bit oversold, and they look like they could be attractive if earnings come in a little bit better and if gold stabilizes, but at the same time shorting gold, because if gold does in fact do what it's supposed to do, it could be a pretty profitable trade on the short side. It will be quick, by the way. It may happen when you sleep, depending on where you're listening to me from, but it will be an interesting move, and I'm sure it's not over the volatility either way right now. But again, just telling you our leaning. If you want to get more information about how we manage money, go to the site, check out the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. It's where we actively trade, and we have your account, and you can see what's going on. $50,000 minimum, or you can do our global allocation strategies, which are more traditional, and we have a more traditional use of money in there. It's not as actively traded, et cetera, but you can check that out as well. Very exciting, both of them. If you have any questions, of course, write to me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I thank you for joining me. I'll see you next week. Have a profitable week and a great May. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented that should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.